Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with my partner, Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, or just through restaurantguysradio.com, and now you can download us right to your computer at iTunes by broadcasting our podcast.
Didn't get that quite right. They're not broadcasting the podcast. They know what you meant. It's okay. Leave it alone.
Why you got to pick on me, man?
I would like to answer a listener email that you even don't know about. I want to get this out there, everyone.
Okay, one more time. When you guys email Francis and you don't email me, it hurts my feelings.
This one won't hurt your feelings. We'll answer one listener email. When Mark introduces me as his partner, we're just business partners, everybody. Just strictly business partners. Okay? Got that?
Yeah, well.
Mark's got a wife and kids. Friends for a long time.
She would be very sad.
But not that kind of friend. I would be very, very frightened is what I would be. Anyway, now that we've gotten that out of the way, I had a great night. I need to be amused by that.
It did amuse me. Thank you.
Oh, my.
Thanks for sharing that on the air, too.
I waited. So, last night, I wanted to share with you, I had a great evening. And I did something that is a throwback. I really think that I was born about 50 years too late.
You watched television all night long?
No.
Well, that's not really a throwback, is
it? I went to hear a singer. I went to hear a woman named Jackie Naylor, N-A-Y-L-O-R.
Was she on some reality TV show or something?
No, she was playing at the Blue Note in New York.
And so she was actually singing live and you were there?
That's correct, sir.
Fascinating. Wow, they have that still?
What did you have for breakfast this morning, Marky?
Cheerios.
Well, yeah, so I went to hear a jazz singer in New York, and she's amazing. I'm going to put a link to her website up on our site, and you can see she travels around the country.
Mm-hmm.
I actually first encountered her on a trip to Spain. I was at with some friends at the Marquis de Grignon. It has a winery there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was having dinner with him, and he had brought in Jackie Naylor to sing for us.
So she's actually great. We actually play a lot of her music at the restaurant.
And you should check that out. And I actually, being the pushy guy that I am, went up to her after the show, and she's going to join us. And I think it's very interesting. You know, the idea of the supper club,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, she did two sets. She did an 8 o'clock show and a 10:30 show. And my rule of thumb as a restaurant guy, never eat dinner at a place like that, you
mm-hmm.
know. But cocktails, yes. And
yes.
We went and I had dinner with some friends elsewhere.
Pretzels, maybe.
Exactly.
You know.
But we went and we sat down and we had a couple of Manhattans and we watched Jackie Naylor mm-hmm. sing. And that was absolutely wonderful. And a real throwback. But I recall seeing people eating dinner. And what you don't want, what you really don't want, is to order the chicken at this place. And the food looked horrible, just horrible. But what I think is very interesting is that, well, you know, that's sort of a weird thing, like dinner theater.
Yeah, you know, Francis, first thing is, the good news is two Manhattans before I start eating will make any meal taste better.
It's okay.
So, matter of fact, maybe three if I'm going to be eating at a place like that.
Well, I sort of miss that. I miss the dressing for dinner, and I miss, like, going mm-hmm. out to dinner and then going to catch a singer. And
well, there really aren't, I mean, certainly in New Jersey we struggle with this, and I think across the country we're struggling with this, with places to go see live performances and to go do that type of thing is really the exception rather than the rule.
Well, we're going to link you to, and also I'll tell you something, everybody, for those of you who work, you know, normal jobs Monday to Friday, going out on a weekday is so much cooler than going
great.
Out on a weekend. Catching the 10:30 show on a Thursday night is just great.
One of the great
Even though
advantages.
It was Wednesday. Sorry, I got mixed up.
One of the great advantages, I was going to let it go, but whatever. One of the great advantages of the lifestyle that we lead is that we can indeed do that. Go out at off times. Going out on Saturday night, for those of you who have to go out on Saturday night, and of course, I understand, you're working 5 days a week, you're getting home at 8 o'clock at night, you can't go out to dinner during the week. It is so much nicer to go out to dinner on a Tuesday or a Wednesday rather than on a Saturday when a restaurant's packing as many people as they can get in and doing as much business as they can, and there's waits at the bar for your drink, and everything takes a little longer. Service is a little worse.
You know, that's not the only thing, though, Mark. And I agree with all of that. And it's harder to get a cab.
The traffic, yeah, it's all of it.
But it's not just that. It's that people are riled up on Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
I'm riled enough. Thank you very much. and
I would hate to see you on Saturday night, pal.
Well, and the other thing is, it's in the people in the business, we refer to Saturday night as amateur night,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know.
Well, you do. I don't.
Well, there are lots of sophisticated people that go out to dinner on Saturday night, but there are a lot of people who you know, save it up all week, and they put mm-hmm. their crazy hat on Saturday.
Right. That's the problem.
You know, seven Manhattans later.
What you're referring to is people are going out and letting their hair down on Saturday night. It's their night to go nuts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so.
So Tuesday night out's very civilized.
Generally, nobody's going nuts on Tuesday night.
So let's look into the news. Did you hear the big news? And we'll share with everyone, it was in all the papers, that Charlie Trotter, who was a guest on this show.
And announced that he was going to be opening a restaurant in New York when he was here.
We have to publish a correction. Charlie Trotter is no longer going to open his restaurant at the Time Warner Center in New York.
Yeah, yikes. That must have been. I would hate it to be at that table when that decision came down.
For those of you who haven't been following it, the Time Warner Center in New York is a building that houses Per Se. It houses a steakhouse by John George von der Richten. Who else is in there, Mark?
Grey Coons.
Grey Coons has a place in there. And they were set to bring in Charlie
Massa
Trotter.
Massa
is in there.
Right.
And it was going to be putting all, like, some of the greatest chefs in America in one building. It's not going great.
Well, Massa's Per Se is doing spectacularly and has become one of the best restaurants in the country.
And so's Massa.
Right off the bat. And so has Massa, exactly.
But Charlie Trotter, who is from Chicago and widely considered to be the best chef in the country, was set to come out. And they said his project grew from 7 to 9 to $11 million.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, all right, enough.
That's it.
Enough.
Right, we can't do this. Well, I also think that...
You know what scared the tar out of me?
What's that?
That when I thought, oh, $7 million? We're spending.
Let's just say too much. Can we just say too much?
We're spending like a fifth of that. I'm like, but we're just us in New Brunswick, New Jersey.
Right.
We're spending too much.
I'm not Charlie Trotter. but Charlie Trotter is, a world-renowned chef. And I think that he was really taking a big risk. When you open your second restaurant in New York and your flagship restaurant is someplace else, like Chicago or California or L.A., L.A. or San Francisco, and you open your second restaurant in New York City and you're already renowned, I think you take a big, big risk. And that risk is you're now going to be under the microscope all the time, every meal. Everybody's looking at you. Everybody's waiting for you to fall down. That's the culture of the super premium restaurant in New York City.
Well, and we have a premium restaurant in Jersey, and we know that we're redoubling. We're opening Catherine Lombardi restaurant mm-hmm. in downtown New Brunswick. We are redoubling our efforts, new silverware, new artwork on the
right.
walls, in stage left, our first restaurant, because we know that the story out there, that everyone, the easiest story for a critic mm-hmm. to write is, they've opened this new place, they're neglecting the first.
And right, bringing some waiters out of retirement in order to make sure that stage left stays at its
and,
level.
And that just can't happen. But our restaurants are right next to each other.
That's exactly what I was about to say. He's in Chicago.
Yeah.
And trying to commute to New York and make it happen in New York at the same time. Very, very difficult.
We're in the same building. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hey, you're back with The Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal and Francis Schott from Stage Left Restaurant in downtown New Brunswick, and also soon to be Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in downtown New Brunswick. And we have a guest on the show today. Rudolf Chelminski is a food journalist. He writes regularly for Life Magazine, Time Magazine, Atlantic Monthly, and several other well-respected publications. He's the author of a new book, Life and Death in Eau Cuisine, which is the story of Bernard Loiseau. The late Bernard Loiseau, you may not realize, he was much loved and known as one of the best chefs in the world. His restaurant in France held 3 stars from the Michelin Guide, or the Guy Michelin, which is the highest rating that you can get from the best publication anywhere in the world. And upon hearing rumors that he might lose one of those coveted stars, in 2003, Bernard Loiseau shot himself, and shocking France and the world. And this was a big story around the world for all of us in the food business, and I think it really hit home for a lot of people who
really one of
seriously.
The most respected chefs in the whole world.
And in France, it was actually, it was number one news coverage mm-hmm. for weeks, for the lead story in all the papers for weeks, above the war, above everything else. And Rudolf Chelminski has written a book about this, and he's here to talk with us about how it happened and what the ramifications and implications of it are. Hey, Rudolph.
Rudolph, welcome to the show.
How are you doing?
We're doing very well.
Pretty well. That was a great book.
Yeah, really terrific.
Thank you very much. As restaurant professionals, I'm sure you understood a lot about what went on with Belle Nile.
Yeah. You know, I have to say, though, I have a slightly different temperament than he. When I get to that point, I've often thought about killing others, but never myself. Now, why did he – I mean, let's ask the basic question for our readers, yes, or listeners who haven't read your book. Why did he do it? I mean, he left behind a wife and kids.
Well, listen, as restaurant guys, you know, one of the basic facts about the business is that it's an exhausting business. You're at it all the time. You finish your lunch service. You just got enough time to take a little nap, and then you've got to do the same thing all over again for the dinner service.
Did you say a little nap?
Yeah. That's what the French guys try to get a little nap.
We call that blinking. It's, I don't know if you can count it as a nap.
Yeah. So I mean, do you think that it was exhaustion and depression?
Yeah, he'd worn himself out. He'd had the restaurant he'd been in the restaurant business for 30 years. He'd never taken a vacation, slightly more than 30 years, in fact. And when he took over this restaurant that he wanted to bring up to full glory, and he did, he was open 364 days a year. He closed at Christmas only, just for take care of the kids a little bit.
Wow.
He never went away. He would go away for some business appointments, that sort of thing, but he was always working when he went away. And the guy turned out he was a manic depressive anyway, so he was working double time all year long. Mm-hmm. And he finally wore himself out to the point where he wasn't thinking straight anymore. And when he was that down, I don't know how many manic depressives you guys have ever met, but when they fall, they really can fall steep and deep.
They fall far and hard, for sure.
Yeah, and well, Belle Nile had a lot of bad news that came at just the wrong time. There was the rumor going around that Michelin was going to dock him a star.
Mm-hmm. Which turned out not to be true. They didn't dock him a star.
Right. It turned out not to be true, and he even knew it was not true. But he had undergone the humiliation
of the rumor.
Of the rumor.
About it and saying, well, if it's not this year, it'll be for next year.
Mm-hmm. Let's
and then there was also the other guy that's pretty famous in France, the Gomio.
Gomio, right. Yeah.
And they did knock him down two points from 19 to 17.
Mm-hmm. Well, he also...
And along with it, because Gomio always does little paragraphs of text, and they wrote a very nasty paragraph about him.
Mm-hmm.
Saying basically he was a loudmouth, it wasn't worth his three Michelin stars.
Hmm.
And
that kind of stuff can be very cutting in our world.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when this happened, we should always remember when this happened, it was February. Well, I don't know your restaurants, and I've never been there, but he was located in a little town, about 200 miles from Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And the big problem when you're in the provinces is getting people to come to the little towns you're in.
Yeah.
Well, this happened in February. No one leaves the main drags in February.
Mm-hmm.
It happened on a Monday in February. Well, again, you guys as restaurant professionals know that Monday is the slowest day of the week, generally.
Sure. Right.
Well, the night before, he had six clients in his restaurant. When he could, you know, his room would hold about 100.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The next day for lunch... He had two clients, and they were two young American cooks who were going around touring to see what the other professionals were doing, and they didn't even order a Belle Nile Oiseau dish. They ordered the one dish that he had on his menu that was invented by his predecessor, Alexandre Dumaine.
Mm-hmm.
And being depressed and being down and being humiliated and not thinking straight, he just went home and took a shotgun to his head.
Unbelievable. I mean, that's so
tragic.
Sad.
Is what it is. It's tragic because he really was super talented, and we're going to get more into you know, his talent and all those things. But one of the things that I want to clear up for everybody is I think people might not understand the Michelin Guide and not understand the star system. Would you mind not clearing up how the Michelin Guide works and the stars there?
Yeah. Well, the Michelin Guide is the guide that counts in France. It's the only one that counts. There are several other guides. But this is the absolute gold standard.
Mm-hmm.
These are the star makers and the star breakers. Well, Michelin has is by far the most extensive guide in France. It seems to cover every town in France. Well, it doesn't cover every town, but it's got far more listings than any other guide in circulation.
Right.
And for food, for restaurants, they have a system. I was going to say it's three categories. In fact, it's four, because just to be listed in the Guide Michelin without any stars at all, it's a big honor for a restaurant.
And I think people don't realize that, because we say a no-star restaurant here in the United States, and people
right.
think the worst of the worst.
Right, but just getting into the Michelin means you've been selected for a little bit for the big leagues. You know?
Right,
right.
And one star, already they have a system of one, two, and three stars. One mm-hmm. star means good dining.
Mm-hmm.
Two stars means worth a detour, and three stars, and Michelin says this officially in their category,
right.
they say three stars means worth a special trip. Well, right. can you imagine people driving from Paris to Alsace, for example, drive half a day just to go to a restaurant and eat.
Right,
but
right.
they do it. That's
yeah.
the funny thing.
Well,
right. it's kind of like somebody leaving New York City and driving halfway to Pennsylvania to get to go for dinner.
Far. Sure.
Now,
sure.
How many Michelin three-star restaurants are there in France?
That varies from year to year, but generally the figure is around 25. It depends on how many people they knock down off the three stars and how many they promote. But at the time of Bernard's death, there were 25, yeah.
So you're talking about the greatest restaurant culture in the world and very, very few three stars. And there's some confusion about stars and different ratings and what exactly these stars mean. And we're going to clear a little bit of that up, and we're going to talk more with Rudolf Chelminski, who's written the book Life and Death in Haute Cuisine, about the suicide of Bernard Loiseau, who was one of the best chefs in France, who unfortunately took his own life upon hearing rumors that he was going to lose one of those coveted Michelin stars. And we'll talk more about that in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125. You're back with The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. The book is called The Perfectionist, Life and Death in Haute Cuisine. Its author is Rudolf Chelminski. It's about the suicide of Bernard Loiseau, one of the top-rated chefs in France, who unfortunately took his own life when he heard rumors that he was about to lose one of his coveted stars. And Rudolf joins us from his home in Paris to talk with us about this fascinating book. Hi, Rudolf.
Hi, how are you doing?
One of the things people may not realize is, there's so much confusion even in among restaurant professionals. I get resumes all the time, and people say, oh, yeah, I worked at a five-star restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking to myself,
you did not.
right.
There's
well,
no
I'll,
such
let
thing.
Let me tell you about that. People mix that up. The only restaurant stars that mean anything in France are the Michelin, one, mm-hmm. two, and three stars. Now, people can get confused because they'll see hotels with a little blue plaque outside that will have three stars, four stars, or even five stars. You go to the Hotel Ritz and any of the top hotels in Paris,
mm-hmm.
and they'll have five stars. But these are listings by the tourism authorities, and it only refers to the comfort of the hotels.
Right.
Those stars have nothing to do with the table.
You would be amazed at how many people actually put that they worked in a five-star restaurant on their resume. And I'm thinking,
right, and hand it to me as a restaurant professional and say, I want you to hire me.
Around here, you can have four stars from the New York Times and several daily publications,
mm-hmm.
but they only go to a maximum of four. But again,
yeah.
the Michelin Guide, one star is a very fine restaurant.
Correct.
Indeed.
Absolutely. They're wonderful restaurants.
It is what we would call an excellent restaurant. I think what the New York Times would probably call a three-star restaurant.
Yep, yep.
Bernard Loiseau took his own life because he felt that his star might be waning. And I want to talk about his life. He has a very interesting way that he rose. And I want to talk about whether or not his life really was on the wane when we come back after the news. We're talking with Rudolf Chelminski. He's the writer of The Perfectionist, Life and Death in Haute Cuisine, and we'll be talking more with him in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. Time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey, 1450. WCTC with The Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal. I'm here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon or just through restaurantguysradio.com.
Today our guest is Rudolf Chelminski. He's a food journalist. He writes regularly for Life and Time and the Atlantic Monthly magazines. He's got a new book. It's called The Perfectionist, The Life and Death in Haute Cuisine, which is the story of Bernard Loiseau. The late Bernard Loiseau was a much-loved and one of the best chefs in the world. His restaurant in France held 3 Michelin stars, which is the highest rating that you can get anywhere. And upon hearing rumors that it might lose one of those coveted stars, in 2003, sadly, he took his own life, shocking France and the world. We're here talking with Rudolf about Bernard Loiseau and this fabulous book, which we're going to put a link up on our website for you to go and buy it. It's really great, and it's a very engaging read. Rudolf, why did you write this book, and how did you know Bernard Loiseau?
I knew Bernard. I'd known him since he was really a kid. I think he was 21 when I met him. He had just started working in a little restaurant in Paris, and I was already pretty much plugged into the French food critic scene by then, knowing a lot of the food critics and a lot of the cooks. And we kept up the acquaintanceship after he left Paris and went to Saulieu. And when he moved to the country, well, I did too, but not quite as far away from Paris as he did. Now I'm living outside of Paris. And so I would, you know, off going to various stories of one kind or another, or just traveling, I'd drop by Saulieu from year to year to see how he was doing. And, you know, I saw him there when he didn't have any Michelin stars. And then over the years, I saw him when he got his first star and his second and finally his third. Fantastic moment of triumph for him. So.
And were you as shocked as the rest of the world when you found out he took his own life?
Oh, yeah, sure. No one could believe it because, you know, everyone knew that he was an excessive guy. He was bursting with energy. He was charging around his place. He loved to show it off. He loved to have people visit. He loved to have journalists. He would call journalists and almost force them to come down there so he could force feed them his latest creations.
Yeah. I mean, that's the MO for a lot of great chefs, though. I mean, you need to have that kind of drive to be extraordinary.
That kind of drive and that will to seduce the clients and the journalists with the joy of his cooking and the energy he puts into it. It's fantastic. And any chef who has that kind of energy has my respect. And I would go drop by there, not all that often, maybe a couple of times a year I'd see him, but I would watch his progress from year to year. And the guy was like a tank. He was absolutely unstoppable. Everyone knew that Bernard would win 3 Michelin stars just by the force of will alone.
I like the way you say win 3 Michelin stars, because it is something that you win, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And not in terms of luck, in terms of winning the game.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things, there are so many wonderful things about your book. One of the things that's interesting is you do talk in depth about the Michelin Guide and how the Michelin Guide works. And you talk in depth as well about what happens with 3 stars and what happens with under the threat of losing 3 stars, and it's a novel of a person.
Yeah.
One of the things that is you deal with really well and really engagingly is the old apprentice system by which Bernard became a chef and learned his trade. Will you tell our audience a little bit about how that works?
Sure. Well, you see, it's the general rule in the States is young aspiring chefs will go to CIA or something like that, or one of the other.
That's the Culinary Institute of America, the cooking school in Hyde Park. But yes.
Right. Or, and the same thing in France, there's several very good cooking schools and what they call this hotellery schools.
Mm-hmm.
But Bernard didn't go that route. He was a high school dropout. He was a bust. He blew his junior high school exams. It's called the BEPC.
Mm-hmm.
And he turned in an absolutely white paper without marking anything on it because he knew he'd flunk. And his father gave him the ritual bawling out and said, okay, what are you going to do now? And the kid shrugged his shoulders and said, I don't know. And father said, well, let's try cooking then. And Bernard said, okay. Well, his father had an introduction to a restaurant which you guys know all about, of course. It's called Trois Gros.
Oh, yes.
Of Rouen. It's one of the great mythical, fantastic restaurants of France.
And one of the things I'll share a little bit with one of the things that you share in your book was that shortly after he became an apprentice, after Bernard Loiseau became an apprentice at the Trois Gros Frères, they got their 3rd Michelin stars 15 days after he started apprenticing there. And I think that's a fabulous confluence of history, don't you? Mm-hmm.
Exactly. That, and that was the start of his ambition. The kid, he was, as I say, he was a high school dropout who arrived in this kitchen. He was given a pair of checkered pants and a white blouse and put to work. His first job was hauling coal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But 2 weeks after his arrival, he saw a transformation. Suddenly the fax went crazy, the phone went crazy. He saw the Twargo brothers opening champagne. They thrust a glass of champagne
right.
in his hand.
Right.
And what the hell's going on here?
Right.
He had just won, the Twargo boys had just won their third star, and it was... Bernard, it was just like a Hollywood scriptwriter would have put it. Bernard looked at them and said, "Someday I'm going to be like them."
Wow. That's unbelievable.
And he followed that ambition ever since. And that's the thing that obsessed him all his life. If you can imagine a guy who was a lot more obsessed by being a great cook than he was by earning money or mm-hmm. sex or you name it. What counted for Bernard was winning 3 Michelin stars. He built his entire life around that.
Yeah, I think it's remarkable the amount of people, especially in this industry, who somehow didn't make it in mainstream America or didn't enjoy mainstream America and decided to go off into this and became huge successes like Bernard and just went down that road.
Down a different road, down the path less taken.
Down a path less taken and did so much in that field when they had failed in other fields.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting question also. Who are the guys who go for the 3 stars? You know, you can make good money with a restaurant with no stars at all. Mm-hmm. I could give you some examples in Paris of wonderful little restaurants that don't have any stars that aren't even in the Michelin Guide.
And don't care to be.
And they don't care. But there's only a handful of guys, or women for that matter, who are willing to put up with the hassle and the fatigue and the disappointment and the sheer willpower that's required to aim for the very top, you know. And Bernard was hooked on that. And nothing else finally counted in his life but those 3 Michelin stars. It was a signal that he had made it. And the mere suggestion that he wasn't worthy of those, you know, that he was going to be sent down to the minor leagues, it was too much for him. It absolutely blew his mind.
Yeah, I think people don't realize you're not, when you're talking about 3 stars from Michelin, you're not just talking about what the food is like, but you're talking about the room, the chairs. There's standards for the silver that's on the table.
Sure.
Everything has standards.
You're
talking about the service in the dining room. This mm-hmm. is something also that is very underrated. People who talk about restaurants, they don't realize the critical importance of the service.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And in France, they are real pros. If you could have seen the service staff he had in Saulieu, they were smart and quick and funny, and they could toss the wisecracks back at the clients, but they were never servile. You know?
Right,
they
they're professionals.
Pat phrases. They were intelligent and quick, and people loved them, and they loved them now.
They were professionals.
Yeah, they were, exactly. They were professionals. They weren't high school kids on a break. You
right.
know?
Right. You know,
or college kids on a break.
And people may not realize that when we talk about a country that takes its dining so very seriously, we think of an expensive restaurant in the United States. Lunch, I mean, Mark and I have spent $1,000 on lunch for 2 mm-hmm. At Michelin 3-star restaurants.
Yeah.
You know, and that's
you've
not.
You've been
to
Marc Vera's place.
Yeah. I also have a weakness for truffles. But I mean, you know, $400-$500 for lunch for 2 is, mm-hmm. is what you spend at these places. And
yeah,
what's,
well, some people exaggerate. You know, if you go, let's blow
a. Actually, Rudolph will have. Rudolph will take this in just a moment. We'll be back. We're talking with Rudolph Chomsky. His book is The Perfectionist, Life and Death in Eau Cuisine, and we'll be talking with him more from Paris in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. You're back with The Restaurant Guys. We're talking today with Rudolph Chomsky. He's the author of a new book called The Perfectionist, The Life and Death in Eau Cuisine, about Bernard Loiseau, who committed suicide when he heard that he might lose one of his Michelin stars. And we've been talking about restaurants in general, the Michelin Guide in general, and this, how 3-star Michelin restaurants are quite expensive. And you were making a point when I interrupted you for the commercial break. What were you about to say there, Rudolph?
All right. I was going to make the point that not all 3-star restaurants are fantastically expensive all the time. The trick is, you were very intelligently talking earlier. I heard on your recorded background.
It was just a brief moment for him.
Yeah,
it doesn't happen a lot.
the smart guys don't go to a restaurant on Saturday night. They go to a restaurant during the week. Well, you go to some of the great restaurants of France during the week at lunch.
Right.
You will have the same fantastic food, and it won't cost you so much. I just brought up, while you were on the commercial break, I just brought up Paul Bocuse's site, and I see that his menu is at 110 euros. That's about $125. And for $125, you will have a meal that will knock your socks off.
One of the best meals in the world. I mean,
but
Francis and I went to Alain Ducasse, and they used to have an 80-euro price-fix menu that wasn't advertised anywhere.
Right, you had to know.
You just had to know that they had it and ask for it.
Yeah, so I just let your listeners know that they should think about going to lunch rather than going to dinner.
And
go during the week, and you'll get fantastic food for not too expensive. I'm not sure that would be the same thing with Marc Vera, because Marc Vera is proud of being the most expensive.
Well, you know, one of the things that's very interesting is, and when you do want to go to these restaurants, you ask when you call, because often these menus are not on their website, because they figure if you're traveling all the way from the United States, they don't want you to order that special menu.
Yeah.
But when you talk at Bocuse, I mean, if you don't get the 120 euro menu, what are you going to spend for lunch? You're going to spend a lot more.
Yeah, if you go on a la carte, you're going to spend a lot more. Sure,
exactly.
But
now,
he's got one menu at 110 euros. He's got one at 150, and he's got one at 190
per person.
But any one of those is still a lot less than $1,000 for two that you guys had to spend.
Yeah, but we had a blast, man. Now,
when Francis and I go out, there's a thing called the table eats well, too. We'll have one of each of those and bring one for the table.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Now, which of these three things should we have? Oh, we'll take them all. Now, Rudolph, when you get 3 stars, you covered a very interesting topic in your book. When you write that when Pierre Troisgros got the 3rd star, he picked up the Michelin guide in the train station that morning and said, "Oh, my God, what a catastrophe."
Yeah.
People don't realize that when you get that 3rd star, there's a tremendous expense to keeping it.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Pressure. I mean, obviously we've been talking about that pressure the whole day.
But what kind of expenses, the expense that you have to lay out in order to keep a 3rd Michelin star is incredible compared to a 1 star.
Yeah, well, Michelin gets crossed when you get onto this subject, because Michelin's religion and their theory and what they lay out for the public is that they award stars only on the basis of food and nothing but the food.
Oh, come
on.
Well,
that's not entirely true, because if you have 3 Michelin stars, Michelin expects to have the service that goes with it, with a couple of sommeliers, with someone to park your car, with proper china, with nice silverware, the whole lot. You know how expensive all that is.
Sure. But I also think that you can't just, if you're going to talk about the top of the top, it can't just be about the food.
Right. You've got to have everything that goes with the food. If you're going to have major league, absolutely top level major league food, you've got to have top level major league service and appointments to go with it.
So did Bernard get himself into trouble? He got himself into some financial trouble as well. He did some interesting things financially with this 3rd star. Can you talk about
that? A lot of other people's money.
Yeah.
He borrowed Bernard. He was the very first. He did something that no other cook in France has ever done, and for all I know, no one in the States has done. I couldn't affirm that, but he maxed out on bank loans to make his place the 3-star level.
Well, a lot of restaurants have done that.
Yeah, well, when he was maxed out on bank loans, he still had some more building he wanted to do. He needed about $6 million, and he went public. He floated himself on the French Stock Exchange, and damned if he didn't get the $6 million that he needed.
There you go.
Isn't that he put himself on the stock. Bernard Loiseau became a publicly traded brand.
He incorporated himself and became a publicly traded brand, and there were so many doctors and lawyers and stockbrokers and journalists who have been eating there for so many years, and a lot of them eating for free because he was fantastically generous. All his clients bought shares of stock.
Right. Well, Bernard Loiseau had a greater name recognition than the president of France.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah.
What's his name again, anyway?
we recently have the cult of the celebrity chef. That's a relatively recent part of our culture. But the top chefs in France have always been revered and, like Mark said, the same level of recognition as the president of France.
Oh, yeah, they're all stars. Absolutely, mm-hmm. they're all stars. Bernard's ambition was to be the top star, of course. And the top star in France for three decades had been Paul Bocuse.
Right.
Who was a good friend of his, of course. But Bernard wanted to outdo. He wanted to become Paul Bocuse. Well,
mm-hmm.
Finally, he got depressed at the wrong time and never was able to fulfill his ambition. And the only one with that kind of recognition at the top of the top now would be Alain Ducasse, maybe. Ducasse
right.
comes close to Bocuse for yeah. name recognition.
Mm-hmm. Well, at Alain Ducasse, I've eaten at Alain Ducasse in France a few times, and they do have one of those lunch menus that if you go to France, you can go to our website and we'll hook you up with how to get into Alain Ducasse, and it's really a special time. Hey, Rudolph, we want to thank you for taking the time to talk with us
thanks
today.
Thanks so much for coming today.
Pleasure. Have fun.
We will, and we'll send a lot of people to buy your book.
Good. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Take care. Bye.
That was Rudolph Chelminski. He joined us from his home in Paris. He joined us to talk about his new book, The Perfectionist, Life and Death in Haute Cuisine, which is about Bernard Loiseau, who was the three-star Michelin chef in France.
A really interesting read.
Who took his own life in 2003 when he heard rumors he was about to lose one of those stars. And the book itself, it's a great and engaging book that touches on a lot of topics that if you care about food, mm-hmm. everything from the Michelin Guide and how it works, how three-star restaurants work, the apprenticeship system, and a little bit about the kind of financial trouble you can get yourself in when you get in over your head. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Shaw. Today's guest was Rudolph Chelminski, author of The Perfectionist, Life and Death in Haute Cuisine, talking to us live from Paris. And I thought a very, very interesting book about Bernard Loiseau, a Michelin three-star chef who took his own life at the threat of losing one of those stars.
It's an amazing book, and it's an amazing human story. And if you're interested in food, it talks a lot about the Michelin Guide. He's very well researched, and it's a lively read as well. You know, the Michelin Guide started as a gimmick. Mm-hmm. To sell tires.
Yep.
Michelin was a big company,
right.
a tire company.
Still is a pretty big tire company,
yeah.
Francis.
Yeah,
more
true.
People know the tires than the book, I think.
That's true. But it is the most important book in France, and what's interesting is...
The most important book in France?
The most important restaurant guidebook in France. But it is one of the biggest selling books in the history of France. Mm. In France, they sell 700,000 copies a year
That's
of the
amazing.
Michelin Guide for like 100 years it's
right.
been out.
It's amazing.
So... 700,000
over 100 years ago.
700,000 Michelin guides every year in a country where a novel that sells 200,000 is considered a bestseller. So
right.
this is probably one of the most well published, well written books and well distributed books in all of France.
Well,
and
you
it
know
started
that,
as a gimmick.
You know, the big guide is coming to New York City this
yeah,
year.
Yeah, yeah.
His first ever, the Michelin Guide is going to come and review New York City restaurants. And I think it's going to be very, very interesting to see how Michelin compares the New York City restaurants to the European restaurants.
Yeah, but they always, when Michelin does another country, they always make it self-referential within that country.
Yeah, but I still think that having have European reviewers talking about American restaurants,
yeah.
and they have different proclivities.
Nobody's getting three stars.
I think somebody will get three stars.
I think
Per Se or somebody's going to get three stars.
Very frightening. Well, you know, again, having a star, even a star or a mention in the Michelin mm-hmm. guidebook is incredible. And one of the reasons that they rose to such prominence in France is the reviewers are notoriously incorruptible.
Mm-hmm.
In France, pretty much every restaurant critic gets a free meal. Like the journalist calls him and says, I will be reviewing you for Le Figaro.
Right.
Yeah, I will be wearing a red suit, you know? So, you know, that's sort of like saying, okay, son, I'm going to look in your room next week and I don't want to find any drugs in there, you know? You know? So,
no magazines.
In a notoriously corrupt, you know, gray area country, the Michelin Guide, one of the reasons it's such an expensive book is because they pay a team of 15 reviewers to just mm-hmm. eat out in the best restaurants in France every day, all the time.
Well, all of Europe. There are Michelin guys in all
the European cities. Well, and they're coming to New York, and I'm very interested to see what they have to say and who they list and who they don't. And I think a lot of feathers are going to be ruffled. I can't wait for that.
I'm sure they're going to be ruffling feathers.
Can't wait for that.
No doubt about that.
Can't wait for that to come up.
Unfortunately, they're not doing New Jersey.
Soon, Mark, soon.
Soon, they'll be coming for us.
Well, listen, everyone, I hope you've enjoyed our time today talking with Rudolph Chelminski of The Perfectionist. Go buy the book. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.
Central Jersey traffic, weather, and your calls. Early morning weekdays with...